Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, September the 26th, as we like to do once a week. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into, a lot of it happening right here in Texas, of course, with the border. President Biden was at the UN. The Democrats had a little trouble with Israel putting together a little funding. And the crime seems to be up in most cities. Why is everybody so surprised? With that, let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Oh, just fine, Silvio, just fine. It is a very, very clear Monday morning here in New York. Clear except politically. Politically,
yes.
It's never clear. But
right.
But the weather has gone with us.
Well, we're having a few weather political climate problems down here as well. A lot of it on the border. I thought this is kind of a funny way to start, Bill, a little funny thing that I wanted to bring up. We'll just take a quick second. But this is going to be the last week in the history of the Cleveland Indians. They have six games left,
right,
as Indians, and next year they'll be the Guardians. And I'm sure everybody's thrilled about that.
Yes. It'll be the Guardians, and there is no doubt that out there in center field, way out, there will be statues, not of Bob Feller or other Cleveland players, but one will be of Lenin, the other will be of Stalin, the great baseball players of the past.
Right, yeah, those wonderful, how many no-hitters did Lenin throw? I think 10 of them, right, I think?
As many as he wished, wherever
yeah.
he wanted.
Whatever he wanted, he got. You're right. No, but it is kind of weird because I guess I'm going to hold on to my Rocky Colavito baseball card with the Indians uniform and the Indians mascot because I think that's going to have value someday, Bill.
It might. You know, we never thought when I was a kid when we bought the little packs of gum,
yeah.
You know, they had one sheet of gum and a baseball card. We never thought these cards would have any value. We traded them because,
right.
And of course, being from Brooklyn, the only cards that interested us at all were Brooklyn Dodgers. If it wasn't a Brooklyn Dodger, we threw away not only the card, we threw away the gum, we threw away the wrapper. We got angry, but when we got a Brooklyn Dodger, well, that was considered, you know, a truly great day.
That's right. That's right. And in fact, I went to a baseball card convention here recently, Bill, and there was a baseball card of Tommy Lasorda with a Brooklyn Dodgers hat. I guess going back to 1954, that apparently has value. Apparently, the Brooklyn Dodgers cards, from what I understand from these conventions, they have value. If you can get not so much the star players, but if you could get some of the lesser known players, some of the backups or whatever that are, you know, apparently those have value. So for whatever it's worth. But anyway, so this is the last week of the Indians. I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss the Cleveland Indians.
Well, yes, and it is a very, very star-filled past. I mean, it's always been a strong team.
Yes.
You know, certainly when I was growing up, I mean, I mentioned Bob Feller. Bob Feller was really the king of pitchers. There was nobody. Mm-hmm. He really symbolized great pitching.
He did, and I think there was another fellow, Bob Lemon, who pitched for them too.
Bob Lemon was another one.
Yeah.
And they had great catchers on the Indians. Now, right now my memory fails me, but when I worked on The Tonight Show, one of them was my guest. Isn't it incredible? I can't think of his name. Johnny Bench.
Donnie Bench, yeah. Well, I tell you, there were so many great players. And, of course, one more note about the Indians. They will go down in history. That was the Municipal Stadium was the place where Joe DiMaggio ended his streak.
Yes.
And it was the Indian third baseman, whose name fails me right now, who made a couple of great plays to stop the streak. So goodbye to Indians and hello, Guardians. And I think the commissioner has bigger problems than changing names, but we'll talk about that some other time. But, Bill, I do want to chat a little bit before we get started to all these topics. This morning in the Dallas Morning News, there was a great article that they published. Hello? Are you losing me, Bill? Am I losing you?
No. I just was going to interrupt because I made a terrible mistake. Johnny Bench played. Johnny Bench did not play for the Indians.
No,
he played for the Reds.
Cincinnati. Yeah, the
Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah. Another great franchise too. Cincinnati Reds.
Yes.
Yes, you're right.
Yes.
Good old number five. Cincinnati Reds.
Exactly.
Yes,
and I stand corrected.
Yes.
Okay, and you were going to say, Sylvia.
No, I was going to say that this morning I picked up my Dallas Morning News. By the way, a quick story about that. When I go out to pick up my Dallas Morning News and I look down the street, I'm the only one getting it for like three blocks. So I don't know what that tells you about print media, but that is where we are. And the Dallas Morning News is not a crazy left-wing paper. I mean, they're kind of in the middle most of the time, but it is interesting that I'm the only one who gets it.
It's sad in a way because sitting there and reading your newspaper has always been a great American tradition.
Yeah.
There used to be a saying, never interrupt a man while he's reading his newspaper. And it had some value. It's really a great American ritual. Now, of course, that began to be dented by the introduction of radio. But the real dent came with the coming of television and television news. And television is the way most Americans who are interested in news get their news today. And I'm sorry to say that social media is challenging that. And that is absolutely awful because the social media doesn't give you the news. It gives you a lot of opinions, but it doesn't give you the news.
No, and you do get editorials or columns in social media, but it's not the same thing as picking it up and holding the paper in your hand, at least in my viewpoint. But anyways, a great article by Selena Zito, who's sort of become a national star because, I mean, she's kind of came out of nowhere. But in the last 5 or 6 years, she seems to be on top of everybody's talking about her articles. And in this one, she's talking about how Americans refuse to forget the 13. And she's talking, of course, about the 13 Marines who were killed in Afghanistan in that terrorist attack and how you see it everywhere. You see it at sporting events. Everywhere you see people remembering the 13. Now, I think part of it is, of course, these were very young people. I mean, there was one of them who was 20 years old and another whose wife had a baby like 2 weeks later. So, I mean, I think the whole thing was so horrific. But she makes a point. I just want to read very quickly what she wrote and get your reaction. Here at the very last end of the article, she says, speaking of the media, how the media is trying to basically stop talking about Afghanistan. And she says, quote, "They think all of this will go away because they have stopped writing about it. They believe Americans will turn away from what happened in Afghanistan. But they could not be more wrong," she says. I think she's got a point here, Bill. I think people really were affected by what they saw in Afghanistan, where we almost like we lost a war on purpose, Bill.
Yes, and I think that's a very good way to put it. We lost the war on purpose because the people running the administration now really don't believe in that war. They really don't have any real problem with the Taliban as long as the Taliban leaves them alone. But the withdrawal from Afghanistan has been catastrophic. First of all, we have lost those 13 irreplaceable Marines. We have lost others. There are people left behind in Afghanistan who may be Afghan and who worked with the United States who are probably doomed. They certainly don't care about them. We have left behind $98 billion in equipment that will probably be used against us someday. It reminds me of the old story, which was part of my generation's upbringing, warning against supplying potential enemies. It was noted that we sold scrap iron to Japan right before the outbreak of World War II, and that scrap iron came back to us in the form of bullets. This is very similar. And no, I don't think it's going to go away. If it was a one-off thing, a one-time thing, maybe there could be forgiveness of the people who caused it. But this is not a one-time thing. This is the policy of the United States government. It's a policy of appeasement. And it is run by a president who has made one mistake after another throughout his career in foreign policy, a man who did not even back the Reagan defense buildup, who was against the bin Laden raid, who has been an appeaser throughout most of his career. And he's far from the worst. He's considered a moderate. He's far from the worst in the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is today very much influenced by, if not controlled by, a far-left fringe that doesn't particularly like this country. And I think that they have gotten off much too easily by the press, been led off too easily by the press, although there have been some indications in recent days of White House reporters getting angry at the administration because information that they should be supplied is not being supplied, and when it is supplied, it is often distorted. So maybe there is a little bit of hope for the press, but probably not too much.
Yeah. Well, one last thought on Afghanistan, Bill. I remember when Afghanistan was the good war and Iraq was the bad one. Remember that? 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you know, all the there's an image of Hillary Clinton speaking when she was a senator during the second Bush term. And I remember she was doing a press conference or something like that, and she was saying, we don't have any problem with Afghanistan. We should be there, but I'm paraphrasing. And she said, Iraq is our problem. But now how quickly they wanted to pull away. Now, I'm not saying that all Democrats wanted to pull away. Unfortunately, the ones surrounding this president wanted to pull away. I don't think, you know, frankly, I don't think Hillary Clinton would have done it this way. I don't like her, but I don't think she would have done it the way. I think she was a little more of a hawk on national security than people realize. But losing the war this way, losing 13 young men, and when you look at their faces, you want to cry because they're so young. I think a lot of people were touched by that. And I've seen this here in Texas. At sporting events, people remembering them, and it's almost like the country looks at it and says, "What a terrible waste to lose a war this way, and to lose these young men." I mean, you're always going to lose soldiers at war. That's a fact. And anytime you wear the uniform and you're in harm's way, obviously you could lose a soldier. But like this, it just makes people angry, Bill.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think, again, it's one of a number of things, both in foreign policy and domestic policy. I think what is happening at the border is infuriating Americans, infuriating Americans. People are let in who are illegally here. They are sent to cities in the United States without any requirement that they be vaccinated. Americans have to be vaccinated in many circumstances to just hold their job, but not these folks. They're getting special privileges in schools. California is now, with great enthusiasm, preparing to receive refugees who are not illegal, they are legal, from Afghanistan, and they're going to be prayer rooms, Muslim prayer rooms in schools. I have no problem with that if all children of all faiths were given those opportunities, but they're not. It's very political. The schools have been politicized. Our foreign policy has been politicized. I don't think Americans like it, and I think that they see so many things going wrong in the country right now that I believe there is a very good chance for political change next year if the Republicans take the election seriously, run a strong, hard race around real principles. If they're going to go in like gentlemen, you know, always ready to lose, they'll lose.
Right. No, you're right about that, but I think that there's so much anger, and I'll talk about the Border Patrol in a minute, but what you just said made me think of something. I was watching Karl Rove over the weekend on Fox News, and he believes that things are actually going to get worse for Biden, for President Biden, because he sees the economy getting worse, inflation getting worse, and the border is going to get worse. I mean, we have not seen the end of the caravans. So he believes that, you know, he could very well be in the mid-30s here by the end of the year,
yes,
which would be fatal, mm-hmm. fatal for him.
That's true. He's now at, the last one on Friday was about 42%
wow.
in the Rasmussen poll, which is the only remaining daily tracker. Very, very low for him. But, you know, another big blow, and you're absolutely correct, he could be in the 30s. And with that may come a reassessment within his own party. Maybe the Democrats will run next year as a party without a leader. Or find a leader. They can find somebody. They can find somebody from show business, a comedian maybe. I mean, they're funny enough, but a comedian. And what is so depressing also is that people look at Biden and they know that he is aging in, mm-hmm. in not a good way. Then they look at who the vice president is. The last time we saw her, she was on a milk carton. I mean, she is supposed to be the one responsible for the border situation. She doesn't seem to be responsible for anything, and she really doesn't even seem to have opinions about it. So
right.
I think there is a sense, you know, very much a sense that we had during the Carter administration. Carter called it the Great National Malaise. He didn't realize that behind the Great National Malaise and coming at him was one Ronald Reagan. Now, we don't
right.
have that today, but I think that there is no great love for Biden. There may be some sympathetic support because he's the president, but I do believe that more and more Americans are coming to the conclusion that we have a leaderless government.
Yes, I think you're right about that. As a practical matter, Bill, you mentioned 42 at Rasmussen. I saw that as well on Friday. But really, as a practical matter, if at 42 and 37, it's really pretty much the same. So what actually could happen in 2022 is a repeat of 2020 in the sense that they'll tell Mr. Biden, just stay in the basement and don't campaign. Now, in 2020, they did it to help Trump. But in 2022, they may do it to help the Democrats because he is down in just about every measurement, Bill. I can't think of any poll, any measurement where he's doing well. I mean, he was supposed to be the more experienced candidate, but I think Afghanistan took care of that, Bill.
That is true. That is true. You know, there was the deal that was made by Congressman Clyburn, the African-American congressman, who really did move the party toward Biden, recognizing mm-hmm. the fact that the others were probably hopeless candidates in fighting Trump. And the argument, as you indicated, was that this is a man who, in a way, deserves to be president, who has been prepared to be president. And, of course, this is all now evaporated.
Oh, absolutely. And maybe hypothetically, if you look at the resume, you could say, well, look at this man. He's been a senator for 40 years, vice president for 8 years. Maybe a little bit of the argument that was made for the first Bush. You know, everybody said, look at this man. Look at his resume. He's the president, or he looks like one, or his resume looks like a president. Now, actually, I should take that back because Bush 41 had a lot more experience. He had been ambassador and a few other things that Biden had never been. But nevertheless, I think people looked at the experience and they said, hey, we need a change. We need a contrast from the more eccentric Trump. But, man, I think people are missing Trump a lot.
Well, that's
these
what
days.
The poll.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead. That's what the
poll
said. No,
I was going to say that I'm laughing because I never thought I would be saying that. At the end of September, Bill, I mean, this guy has only been president for 8 months, and Trump is already beating him in the polls, Bill?
Yes, well, I think there's a lot of buyer's remorse. I think that the polls show probably more a rejection of Biden than a love of Trump, because let's face it, Trump lost the election last year. It wasn't that Biden won it. Trump lost it. And he lost it because he was personally not a very popular guy. Many people just can't stand him, and I understand that. But come around next year, in 2022, we're going to have a congressional election. And if it goes the way some people are predicting, and we're very careful about predictions here at Urgent Agenda, the Republicans should take over at least the House and possibly the Senate as well, then Mr. Trump will have to make a decision. I think the greatest thing he fears, and it's a completely legitimate fear, is running and losing. That would really end him. I mean, he would be seen as the man who damaged the Republican Party, the man who prevented others from coming up to the presidential level. He would be seen as kind of an evil, egotistical figure. If he won, on the other hand, it would be the greatest comeback in American history since Richard Nixon, probably a greater comeback than Richard Nixon. And then we could have some very, very interesting times politically in Washington.
Well, Bill O'Reilly was saying the other day that he has spoken to President Trump. I guess they're old friends there from New York. And O'Reilly has certain access, as friends really, not necessarily as a journalist or a commentator. And he's telling, he said on his podcast that he's telling President Trump to look at the example of Prime Minister Churchill, who was defeated and then came back. And we remember him now for the coming back that from being defeated. But he's pointing to Winston Churchill as the example. I don't know if that's a good example, because that's a different system, a parliamentary system. But clearly Churchill came back and he was able to restore his reputation as a winning candidate. But I think you're right. I think Trump doesn't want to lose twice. I also think, as a Republican that I am, there's some pretty good talent on the bench. There's a lot of Republicans on that bench that would make pretty good candidates, Bill.
Absolutely true. And despite the attempts by some of the press to disparage them, they are surviving. I mean, I have not seen the latest polls in Florida. DeSantis was losing for a while over the COVID-19 situation. I don't know what it is today. And, of course, he has not made any moves toward running. Nobody will until Trump makes his decision. Trump's decision is going to dominate the Republican Party until he absolutely announces one way or the other. But certainly DeSantis, certainly Governor Abbott of Texas, certainly Nikki Haley, some of the others, other governors, members of the Senate. The Republican Party is rich in talent. And rich and talented ways that I think the Democratic Party is not. The people who come up in the Republican Party tend to come up without too much reference to their personal background, whereas in the Democratic Party, identity politics has become the rule. I mean, the Republican Party has, for example, people like Marsha Blackburn, a vote-getter from Tennessee who has been a fine United States senator, and a person who would make a strong candidate. She's very, very personable and very, very knowledgeable. But nobody hears that much about her because she has not gone through the personal wars. And in the Democratic Party, that's all that's left is the personal wars. If you look at the Democratic Party by contrast, you have a party with very little talent because no talent has been allowed to develop. You don't see, for example, a governor who is a clear candidate for president. You have a situation where if Biden should not be with us any longer and Kamala Harris becomes president, would the party automatically renominate her? I think it would, but I think there would be great reluctance because she makes a fool of herself every time she opens her mouth. If Biden decides not to run, but is still alive in the 2024 cycle, and simply decides not to run, then they would have a situation where they have a sitting vice president, but no presidential nomination to go with her. And that then you could have a fight. But once again, you run into identity politics. She is a woman of color, and many people will be reluctant to run against that identity. This is the cost of identity politics. It restricts a party's movement. Makes that party into a group of warring factions, which is what you have in the Democratic Party.
That's right. That's exactly right. We're going to take a little break, and we'll keep talking with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just another reminder, the music of my good friend Carlos Guedes. I have a link to his website. He plays around town. He's also a pretty good composer and producer, arranger. Does a lot of different things in his CDs. So I would encourage you to check him out. Plus, he's from Venezuela. He's a good friend from Venezuela. He and his wife, Luisa, are good family friends. Let's get back to our friend from New York, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking a little bit about President Biden, Bill. I want to begin now with talking about the border, the U.S.-Mexico border. There is a journalist in Mexico who's written a very interesting article that was published again in the Dallas Morning News on Sunday. I guess the article was originally in Spanish and it was translated, and he's quoting the governor, the Mexican journalist is quoting the governor of one of the northern states in Mexico. And the question everybody's asking in Mexico is, how did 14,000 people walk through Mexico and get to the United States? I mean, no disrespect intended, but it's not exactly like there's a lot of black people in Mexico. I think if you saw a group of Haitians, blacks walking through Mexico, I think they'd be noticeable for most people, but yet they were able to walk through the country and show up at the border, and nobody saw them, Bill. So a lot of a lot of governors in Mexico are asking the question, how in the heck did this happen? And last week I was having dinner with some friends of mine from Mexico, and they're asking the same question. How does this happen? How do people just walk through your country? And they're not happy about it, Bill.
And that's right. And who feeds them? Who feeds them? Who clothes them? Who nurses them?
Yes.
A lot of questions are being asked. I mean, Haiti and Mexico are not exactly next door neighbors. You have to get from Haiti to Mexico. Now,
right.
Who's paying for that? Who's
right.
paying for that? And you do get the feeling that there is a party involved or several parties involved who have not been identified and that are providing the funds to do this, and that nobody really wants to talk about who they are. But I'd love to know who they are.
I'd love to know who they are, too. And there's people in Mexico who want to know the same thing. This is not really just an American question. I mean, a lot of Mexicans are asking the same question. But what's interesting, from what I hear, and nobody knows 100%, but what I hear is that many of these Haitians left Haiti back in 2014 when many of them went to Brazil to work in the World Cup and the Olympics, because Brazil had the World Cup in 2014, the Soccer World Cup, and the Olympics in 2016, and they needed a lot of workers to work, put up the new stadiums and all of that. And that they simply brought in, on a work visa basis, a lot of these Haitians. And they were there, and some of them went to Chile also, because the Chilean economy was doing very well. But apparently their work visas expired. And that combined with the opening in the United States, many of these people said, my gosh, here's our chance. We don't want to go back to Haiti, so here's our chance to go to the United States. Now, that's where some of them came from. Now, I've looked at the map several times, Bill, from Rio or Sao Paulo to Del Rio, Texas, and that's a pretty big map. And there's something called the Amazon River that you got to cross just to get out of Brazil. So this is really one heck of a walk. I mean, these people would win the Olympic gold medal if they actually walked by themselves, Bill.
Absolutely. I mean, people have a lot of questions about this. And I think that those questions are not being answered, in part because the press is not that interested. I think we have a very much a failed press in the United States right now. I think that shows, by the way, in every poll taken about confidence in the press. And they're not doing the job. I mean, I've been reading articles in alternative publications pointing out many big stories that many news organizations don't even cover. And you wonder why. Well, maybe we shouldn't wonder why. Maybe it's because they are sympathetic to the idea of open borders. And I think that may be true.
That may be true. But, Bill, if you were the editor of a newspaper and your interest was in providing news or in informing people or just plain selling newspapers, Wouldn't you call in, because I would call in a couple of my reporters and say, look, this is really curious. How did these people get up here? I need a couple of you guys to do some work and find out, because this is, just doesn't make any sense on the surface of it, that they would have walked on their own, let's say, from Rio de Janeiro. I mean, the only thing that Rio de Janeiro and Del Rio have in common is the word Rioville. But this, they're like thousands of miles away. I mean, you don't usually think of Rio de Janeiro to Del Rio, Texas, as a normal transportation route.
No.
So
well,
many
I
questions.
I think I figured out the answer.
Good.
It turns out that many Haitians have built up their frequent flyer miles. That's what it is. And they,
that's it.
They just turned them in and said, I want to.
Right. They went to the airport and said to Mexicana Airlines from Rio to I don't know, whatever, Monterrey, Mexico or whatever, and they flew there. But, Bill, the distances are overwhelming. I have driven in Mexico's roads. I've driven in Mexico highways. They're adequate. Their highways are adequate. I don't want to criticize them. Yeah, good highways. Many of them are two-lane roads, but still, they're adequate. They're paved. They're fine. You can drive. But walk is another thing, Bill. So somebody had to be helping these people, and that's a question I have, and I think you do as well, Bill.
Sure. Look, they have to be fed. If you're going to bring children, of course they have to be fed. The fact is there do not seem to be many fatalities along the way, and we're thankful for that. But somebody's keeping these people fed, keeping them alive, providing ice cream cones, maybe even Taliban flags. I don't know. Maybe they also show up. By the way, that's not said in jest. They have detected a number of people from the Mideast and from Asia coming across the southern border. How do they get all the way to the United States and then make that trip across the border? But no questions are being asked.
Right.
Very uninquisitive press.
Yes. And then the secretary, Mallorca, over the weekend, I don't know whether he meant to say this, but he did say that 13,000 people were let into the country without any conditions, apparently. Oh, I guess they have a court date pending. Okay, yeah, they have a court date pending. Yes.
I'll be there to report the story when they show up in court.
Right, yeah, they're given a piece of paper that says, okay, on December 4th, 2026, make sure you show up at this court, okay? So go ahead.
Yes.
You can pass. Just make sure you show up at the court. I mean, it is really sad because I feel these people are being used. And I look at this whole story, Bill, and the only beneficiary of this whole story are criminal elements, Bill.
Yes, I'm afraid that's true. Yeah. Yes, the drug trade. And again, many of these people coming into the country are being sent to cities in the United States without the consent of those cities, without the consent of law enforcement, and this is a problem that may start showing up in the coming months, that some of them may in fact be parts of elements that we really don't want welcome, or at least shouldn't welcome.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right, and people will play the race card as they did down here, Bill, with the Border Patrol agent on the horse.
Oh.
I thought that was shameful, what they did to that agent, who was simply
doing his job,
Bill.
They absolutely shameful, because the agents, first of all, they are on horseback. People will say, my God, do we still use horses? Yes, we use them in certain terrains. The terrain does not provide much support for vehicles. It is a very rough terrain that they're working on, but horses are ideal. Second, most of the agents, it turns out, on the border are Hispanic, and that is because they have to know Spanish. It is absolutely important for them in doing the job to know Spanish. And I think there should have been some sensitivity to that. Turning against the agents is turning against, in many respects, a local community where several members of a family may work for the Border Patrol. And
right.
No consideration was given to them at all. Third, they didn't do anything wrong. Nobody got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody got hurt. They simply used what appeared to be very normal and very much accepted law enforcement techniques. There was some uproar over the fact that they would turn the horses quickly away or turn the or in another direction, and this was said to be a threatening gesture. It turns out that the reason they do that is to make certain that the offender does not get control of the horse, which could mm-hmm. wind up in a catastrophic situation. And the president getting on the air and saying, "I saw that, I saw that," it reminds people of slavery. What a ridiculous argument. What an absurd argument. And, of course, we had Al Sharpton down there. He immediately came down to bear witness at this slavery-like incident. It was nothing of the kind. And I think, you know, I'm reminded of the fact that Dr. King said that television was the greatest weapon of the civil rights movement because people could actually see what was being done to demonstrators in the South. I think that you have a situation like this today where television will become the greatest weapon of law enforcement when people see that the great majority of law enforcement officers are out there doing a job at great risk to themselves and should be supported.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. When I saw President Biden speak that way, Bill, my first question was, did he actually see it or was he just reading something? Because any human being – look, I saw the – I mean, I didn't see it live, but I mean, I saw the photo. And at first I said, well, he doesn't have a whip. I mean, why are they talking about a whip? He doesn't have a whip. And then I said, well, he's trying to control the horse. And then – but yes. They immediately play the race card. I mean, it's pathetic, Bill. It's like all they seem to have is the race card. There doesn't seem to be anything else in their vocabulary except we got to play the race card. I think that's really an insult on that community. Just one quick thing. There's a story in that I saw a fellow named David Marcus is the author of the story. And David Marcus went down there and was talking to the people in Del Rio. That's a community, Bill, of 15,000 people, meaning the population of Haitians was almost the size of the city, okay? And many of these people felt very threatened by that. I mean, my goodness, why wouldn't they? And they were grateful that the Border Patrol agents were there to protect them. It seems like that side of the story is never presented. And what you mentioned, the Hispanic factor, most of those Border Patrol people, most of those mayors down there, most of those politicians down there who are criticizing all this crazy stuff on the border are Hispanic, and many of them are Democrats, Bill, who are not happy with their president.
Absolutely. They are the ones directly threatened by the hordes of people coming over the border. Look, we're a pro-immigrant country. We're pro-legal, L-E-G-A-L, immigrants. We are not pro-illegal immigrants. That's the issue here that the Democrats would like to blur. Oh, we're welcoming people in. We welcome people in under law, and the great majority of people come under law and go through the process. By the way, here is a bulletin that is important for our discussion. Rasmussen just published its latest 40% approval of Biden.
Wow. That's gone down to 40,
and it's gone down just constantly every day. Now, here are other figures in that the new poll. 21% who strongly approve of the job Biden is doing, and 50% who strongly disapprove. That is a disaster. I've not seen numbers like this. This is a collapsing administration.
I have not. I think you have to go back maybe, Bill, to Richard Nixon at the very end of his presidency. Maybe, of course, they didn't have Rasmussen back then, but I know that his polling data was pretty bad back then. But that was a very unique situation. But here I think it's a combination of factors. And somebody was saying that wait until the inflation really hits. I tell you, I see the inflation. We go out to dinner, and all of a sudden, what used to be $25 is $35. My wife last Saturday came in and said, "I just filled up the gas tank. It's 18 gallons." She said it was $50, and the look in her face was like, "This is I've never seen this before." Well, honestly, I've never put $50 in the tank before either, Bill.
We did have one period back in the 1970s, was it, when there was an oil boycott by some of the producing countries where the price of gasoline soared and we had long gas lines. It's one of the things that brought down Jimmy Carter. But I think the difference this time is that this looks like a situation that's going to not only go on, but extend to other areas of the economy. The gas lines of the 70s applied only to the price of gasoline. We're seeing other prices soaring. We're also seeing shortages. We have situations now where in the New York area, the stores that ordinarily deliver within one day or 2 days, if you put in an order, are extending their delivery times because they cannot get drivers to drive the trucks. It's a transportation situation, and it's now spreading throughout the country. Costco is starting to ration products in particular, and basically many people are stocking up. There's going to be a run on products at the same time that we're going to get an increase in prices and we're going to get an increase in taxes, no matter what they say about the new tax bill. This is a dramatic moment. I looking at this figure of 40%, as we said before, 1 point lower, he's in the 30s. And then you're getting into very, very bad territory.
Well, you're also getting into territory where the Democrats are beginning to worry themselves. If you're running for re-election,
oh sure,
in a competitive district or election in 2022, this is really going to worry you. It's not going to affect, a safe Democrat. But if you're running in any kind of competitive election, this is not going to help you at all. But that is amazing, 40%. I'm trying to remember the last time it was that low. Maybe Bush right after Katrina, it may have been that low. But man, that's a pretty low number from a pretty responsible pollster. I'm not saying he's perfect, but
yes,
that pollster has been fairly good for quite some time. That daily tracking poll has actually been pretty good. I think the reason that I like that poll, Bill, I think you do too, is because he's using likely voters, and that gives it a sense of seriousness that other polls don't have. I mean, I don't even pay attention to a poll that is based on all adults. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's just an organization doing a poll because they have to, you know. But at least Rasmussen is likely voters, and that helps. So that's pretty bad news, Bill.
And we're not even sure the adults that they poll can think like adults.
Well, that's the problem. Yeah, when they say all adults, I'm beginning to wonder. I wonder how many of those adults are actually adults. Or people who just said, are you 18 or older? Yes, I am. Okay.
Yes.
And then they said, well, the question. Are you 18 or older?
Yes. No, you must be an adult. That's it. I'm interested and intrigued by the effects this will have or might have on the Virginia gubernatorial election, which has now gotten very close.
Right.
Apparently, the latest polls in Virginia show that if you poll registered voters, McAuliffe wins, the Democrat, but if you poll likely voters, the Republican wins. And I think that those polls may be accurate. For the Republican Party in Virginia, this has got to be a turnout year. Get the people to the polls. And if they get to the polls, they may give the Democrats a good run for their money. Virginia is a critical state. It's a state that used to be solidly red. Then it turned purple. Now it's become reliably reliably blue, rather. And if it can be reversed, a tremendous thing for the Republicans.
Well, if it can at least be made purple, I'd be happy with just being purple. But, yeah, you're right. That used to be an automatic. I remember in 2000 and 2004 when you were looking at that map on election night, you assumed that that was going to be red. I mean, there was no question.
Yes.
No question about that. A couple of topics, Bill, I want to get into here as time is flying. The president's speech at the U.N., and also this incident with the Democrats in the House and the State of Israel with that dome, I guess, that Israel has, or whatever that's called.
Iron Dome.
Yeah, that's right. The president at the UN, I don't know. I mean, what was your impression, Bill? I mean, I listened to a little bit of it. And I said, I've heard this before during the Obama years.
Yes, Yes. And that is, I think, a very, very important issue that, again, the press doesn't want to discuss. Who is really controlling this administration? Whose strings are being pulled? The policies of this administration are aligning very closely with the policies of the Obama administration. Many of the people at the top in this administration are Obama people. Some work directly in the White House, like Susan Rice, who was a key member of the Obama administration. She's now head of domestic affairs, which, of course, is not her area. That's just a title. She's there, I think, to represent certain points of view. And it is becoming an Obama foreign policy, very clearly. It's becoming worse than Obama's domestic policies. I think he had a little bit of restraint. Now the Democratic Party is willing to just do anything, because they think they're going to lose the election next year, anything to get this enormous bill through, which is filled with all kinds of terrible pork. I learned last night that this big omnibus bill the Democrats are trying to put, what is it, $4.3 million or whatever, includes a very large cut, not an addition, a very large cut to medical research. Now, how in the world could anyone justify that when they're giving so much money to other causes that are basically just ideological causes of the Democratic Party? We're heading for trouble. We're heading for a lot of trouble. I could easily see a situation where the committee, the very famous political committees, make a visit to the White House.
That's right.
And say to the president, "Mr. President, your presidency cannot be sustained." Mm-hmm. The problem with that is that when it occurred with Nixon under very difficult situations, they came to the White House and said, "Look, Mr. President, you're going to be removed from office unless you take action. Your support is collapsing." And they had Gerald Ford as vice mm-hmm. president, who at least was a highly experienced, high-level
right.
government official. The committee this time would have to be dealing with the situation of Kamala Harris.
Right. And back then, as I recall and as I've read, that was the big reason they went, because they knew that Gerald Ford would take over. I mean, there was a high degree of confidence in Gerald Ford, not just as a politician, but as a man, that he would be exactly what the country needed, sort of a calming figure after Watergate. In this case, I don't think Kamala Harris would inspire a lot of confidence. Which makes me wonder then, to follow up on your story, I'm going to dramatize it a little bit. What if they call for both of them to leave? I'm dramatizing it.
That's a very creative idea, because they can say, look, Cammy can't take over.
Right.
People can imagine Kamala Harris taking the oath of office. Kamala Harris.
But I can take your story a step further, Bill. I can dramatize your story a step further. We ask Mr. Biden to leave. Then she becomes president. And then she appoints, let's say, Joe Manchin as vice president. And then we ask Kamala to leave. And then Manchin of West Virginia is now the – I mean, I'm really getting dramatic here. Maybe I should stop my story, because I got other things to get into. But – anything can happen. That's kind of what I'm trying to say, I guess, with my drama
that's
story.
That's the thing. We always warn our leaders about exactly what you're saying now. We're very wise comments. Anything can happen, including things that are completely unpredictable. I mean, a year from today, 6 months from today, we could be at war. The president can be gone. For natural reasons, and we don't wish for that. We don't wish for any bad to come to an American leader. But you can't predict. And also, the Republican Party can mess up. They have a history, as I've said on this broadcast before, of working hard to lose elections, and it can happen again. So, they've worked very hard in the past. They've gotten commendations for their efforts. I mean, you look at the situation in California. That recall should have been an easy win. But the Republican Party did nothing to advance it. They really didn't.
Right.
And here in New York, we are going to have probably Eric Adams as mayor, who's a moderate Democrat, who has to be elected in November, but it's almost a sure thing. But the Republican Party had an opportunity that they haven't had since Giuliani ran in the early 90s and won. they had an opportunity to elect a mayor because the current one is so unpopular and the policies are so unpopular, they didn't even lift a finger. Not a finger.
You know, no, you're right about
it's
that.
Just, it's a country club party here in New York.
That's right. One quick thing I'll say about, and this is a serious comment, not a dramatic one. You mentioned before about we could be at a war. I think one of the candidates for president that I see rising in value as foreign policy crises come, and they will come, is Mike Pompeo because of his experience.
Yes.
So I would not be surprised if, let's say, 2 years from now, when they're starting those debates on television, that he's there, Mike Pompeo, because of his experience and respect. And I like him. I mean, when he's on TV, the guy makes a lot of sense. So I don't know. Anything can happen. So that's why I think Mike Pompeo could very well rise. His stock could rise as foreign policy crises. One quick thing I wanted to say, Bill, issue. You wrote this week something very interesting here in the last few days about the increase in crime in our cities. And it is interesting, Bill, you know, maybe I shouldn't be shocked, but you talk about defunding the police, you don't take care of the police, and then all of a sudden crime goes up. Do I see a connection there, Bill?
Gee, I guess there might be, but of course we can't talk about it. We can't talk about
right.
it. Yes, there was an area in Minnesota that is being looked at, where they had a crime problem around the University of Minnesota. I don't know if it's the main campus or one of the others, but they did the right thing. They reinforced the police, and the crime rate went down. So, it must have been something else. Maybe the weather changed. Maybe that's what it was.
There was climate change, and that did away with
the crime. Of course there was. But the attacks by the Biden administration on the Border Patrol will remind people of the defund the police movement and how unpopular it is. And I think it's going to do great damage to Biden, and he doesn't need damage right now. He's just sinking like the Titanic.
Yeah, he is, and it's amazing to me that there's nobody around him. These are those moments when the wife talks to her husband and says, Joe, you got to get rid of these people around you. They're killing you. I mean, because you would think the wife is sensitive to these approval ratings. I mean, she's watching this, and she has got to know. Jill Biden has got to know that her husband is sinking. It's got to be hurting her, I'm sure, emotionally. But she's got to know. You remember when Mrs. Reagan would sometimes talk to President Reagan and sort of bring him up to speed of what was happening in the world? This is a moment where she could actually help her husband by saying, you got to get rid of everybody around you and put a new team in because they're killing you, Joe. I don't know. Maybe I'm being optimistic.
I think that's true. I don't know what the relationship is between the two, between the president and Dr. Biden. People kind of laugh at the title because traditionally in the academic world, only medical doctors are referred to as doctor. You can be referred to doctor you can be referred as a doctor if you wish. You can ask for it, but it's considered pretty low class. It really is. But she wants to be called Dr. Biden, and I don't know whether she gives him political advice. I do know that he's fading after less than a year in office. I mean, but he's fading away very, very rapidly, and there is a political crisis within the Democratic Party because no matter what happens to the country, the progressives will not change their views. They are fanatics. They are ideologists. They believe the purpose of a party is ideological, and the party can just go down. You know, I think that one of the most interesting things that must be on the minds of many people who are on the center-left in this country right now is, why don't we form a new political party? This would certainly be the time. This would certainly be the time. I think any new political party, remembering that Ross Perot in 1992 got 20% of the vote, I think any new political party would get 15% of the vote and would take those votes away from the Democrats, meaning the Democrats could never win a national election again, and there would have to be some change.
But that third party could win because they were made up of serious people, if they were made up of serious people like Joe Lieberman, let's say, people like that, I think they could very well win the Electoral College, for example. with the number of states or whatever. Well, Bill, that's going to wrap it up for this week. As always, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the great work at Urgent Agenda. And it just means we have a lot more to talk about next week, Bill. I'll come up with another dramatic story. You set me up, and I'll come up with a dramatic story.
I think they're coming, and I think people may start believing them.
That's right. Well, maybe so. But
you know,
the question is still out there. How did 14,000 people walk from Rio to Del Rio? That's that's almost sounds like a Marx Brothers movie.
Right, and I hope that the reporter from Fox News, Peter Doocy, asked that question at one of the presidential news conferences.
Well, that would be a good question, because I think even
sure.
I mean, my goodness, that is a long walk. I'll put it, you got to go through quite a few tennis shoes to make that walk.
Yeah, yes.
From Rio to Del Rio. What a, that'd be a great title for an article. From Rio to Del Rio. All right, Bill, have a great week. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Sylvia. Great talking to you as always.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots of things to get into this week. Sometimes a little funny, but we got to laugh a little bit, don't we? Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.